It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Abby Hornacek.
I'm Ben Domenech.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. I'm Lisa Brady. Another record set at the southern U.S. border, raising more concerns about security.
The Border Patrol has to deal with this wave of humanity instead of patrolling the border and seizing drugs and saving people from human trafficking.
I'm Dave Anthony. The FBI says China is the number one threat to the U.S., and things could get really bad if China invades Taiwan.
We ignored Osama bin Laden, for instance, until 9/11. We cannot afford to ignore China because China is much more powerful than Osama bin Laden was or ever could be.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Just a few days after the forced resignation of his Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, the Homeland Security Chief, Alejandro Mayorkas, faces lawmakers and gets grilled on the continued surge at the southern border, an October record of more than 230,000 migrants crossing. And sources tell Fox News, October averaged about 2,000 gotaways every day.
My question to you now is, can you guarantee that none of those people have criminal records?
Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamak, among the Republicans demanding answers on border security during a hearing on worldwide threats to the homeland.
This enforcement work is not fun, Congresswoman. This is a noble profession in which people risk their lives to conduct it. And you know that very well.
All the righteous indignation. Here we go.
The Biden administration has said and inherited a broken immigration system, but has faced criticism from some Democrats, too.
Policies have to change. You can change individuals, but if you don't change the policies, then you're not going to make a difference at the border.
Texas Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar says he supports legal migration and law and order at the border. This as a court fight continues over Title 42, the Trump-era COVID-related rule that has allowed the U.S. to turn away many asylum seekers. A federal judge ruling late yesterday that it's unlawful, calling it arbitrary, and suggesting the CDC could have used other measures to address COVID concerns. But that rule does nothing to stem the surge of illegal crossings. Still, Mayorkas says the sovereignty of the United States stands strong.
Well, it's true that we're still a sovereign nation, but, you know, to pretend that there is not an actual crisis of this chaos that's at our southwest border. We ended the month in October at 230,000 encounters.
Ron Vitello is a former Border Patrol agent who has served as Deputy Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection and former Acting Director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
It's unfortunate that the men and women of DHS have to watch their leader talk about the border being secure on television in front of Congress when anybody that lives on the border, anybody that's been in the Border Patrol for 5 minutes, knows that's just not the case. They're overwhelmed down there. And the cartels are setting the agenda, not the government, not the line agents. You know, this reckless policy emanating from the White House has caused complete chaos down there.
Can you put that 230,000 encounters number into some sort of context for us? Because I'm not sure that, you know, most people have a handle on exactly what that means in terms of how overwhelming that is.
Yeah, so you think about a place like Yuma, Arizona, there's probably nearly 1,000 agents assigned in Yuma. And when the border is seeing 230,000 apprehensions a month, that means in a place like Yuma, that's several hundred people in 24 hours that are taken into custody by the Border Patrol, which means that they're probably not able to send people to the line to protect and patrol the border because the system is overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed by getting these people into custody, putting them in the system, making sure that they're humanely cared for during the time that they're going to stay in CBP custody. And so the Border Patrol has to deal with this wave of humanity instead of patrolling the border and seizing drugs and saving people from human trafficking. We had over 800 people died on the southwest border attempting to enter just last year. That number has never been that high in the history of us collecting that data. This is the worst year on record for deaths at the border. And what people who live in those communities know is Those are the bodies that have been found by authorities. That doesn't account for the, you know, maybe hundreds more who are out in the desert somewhere. It won't be found for years.
It seems to have faded from the headlines somewhat recently, especially now that the midterm voting is over. But buses are still rolling from Texas to other states, especially New York City, busloads of migrants. Do you think that's been an effective policy by Texas and some cities down there near the border?
It matters on what they're trying to accomplish, right? What they've succeeded in doing out of Texas is relieving the border communities that are completely overwhelmed by these populations and sending them to some place where they intended to go in the first place, right? So they've been released by our government into the local community, and the state has taken it upon themselves to take them from the border. And since they're taking them, they've decided to take them to New York. And the twofer here is they're also getting attention to a problem that's being ignored by most of the politicians, certainly the ones that are in power now, including the White House. They said that we didn't have a crisis on the border. They ignored it. Now they're saying it's just fine. The border's secure. The sovereignty of the United States is still intact. It's nonsense. They've created a policy regime that is encouraging people from all over the world to come to the border and to come now, because many of them won't even be encountered by CBP. They will not be arrested. They will not be encountered by law enforcement. And many of those who are taken into custody are going to be released.
Is it also maybe the labor shortage in the U.S. that's driving this surge? Because it's no secret. We've got, 11 million or so open jobs.
The economy always is a factor as it relates to the pull from these places. But this surge and the magnitude of it is more than just the economy. And it's really sad, everybody wants a better life. Many of us have an immigrant story in our background. You know, our parents or our grandparents, or maybe even further back, people came from all over the world to make a life here. And some of the people that are in the pipeline now have that sentiment. But along the way, they get abused. They get hurt in dramatic ways. People die. We saw what happened in San Antonio with that tractor trailer rig. It's a dangerous journey. Many of the people who come here, or many people in the pipeline, will be picked off by human traffickers and smugglers. They'll be forced to do things that they never intended to do. And some of them are going to come to the United States, fleeing violence in their own hometowns, and be picked off by the very gangs that they were trying to leave home to get away from. This is an endless supply of recruits for the cartels and for the organized crime gangs that are, unfortunately, in some of our urban centers.
I wanted to ask you about the vetting process, because Republicans are, raising concern about the criminal records of some illegal immigrants and whether proper vetting is happening. How does that process work, and how different is it from the previous administration?
Well, I think the vetting for this population is, there's been some times during this surge where, people were released at the border without a notice to appear in immigration court. They were given a notice to report at the nearest ICE office once they got into wherever destination that they were going to. But generally, in most cases, when people are taken into custody by the Border Patrol, they're vetted against U.S. holdings. What that means is their biographic and biometric information is checked against databases in the United States. So if they are wanted, if they have a criminal record or have a previous immigration record, it will show up in the context of that arrest. And in some cases, they'll be adjudicated. If they're wanted, they'll be turned over to the local authorities that want them. And with the number last year of over 600,000 people of what the agency calls known gotaways, you have to believe that some of those people evaded arrest, not just because of the volume and the chaos at the border, but because they didn't want to be found by law enforcement.
Secretary Mayorkas is denying reports that he might step down soon. How much would that actually help or change anything, though? Because any replacement would still be implementing the same policies under the current administration, right?
It's a very good point. The policy is what's driving this chaos. Obviously, the secretary has a responsibility to execute on behalf, and he serves at the pleasure of the president. And so if they change the secretary and don't change the policy, then we're not going to see a lot of difference at the border.
Some Republicans also argue the ousted head of Customs and Border Protection is being used as a scapegoat how much discretion does CPB have in the way that it operates?
Chris Magnus, the former commissioner who just resigned, had the ability to fix what was going on at the border and didn't. That's a dereliction of his duty. But what I suspect is happening is that this policy is being driven by the White House and them making him a scapegoat for that. I don't know. I'm a little dubious about it, right? He's a former law enforcement officer. I think he was hired for reasons that are very unclear, but one of the points in his resume that attracted him to the White House was, you know, he made some statements about the previous immigration policies of the previous president, and he wrote some op-eds, and he was on the record saying he didn't want local law enforcement authorities cooperating with ICE at the detriment of the city he served in Tucson. And so I think that's why he was there. He was a law enforcement officer. He knows what happens in the context of law enforcement. If you don't enforce laws, or if there's no effective enforcement at the border, what will happen? Will you just get more law breaking? And so I think that might be part of the calculus of why he's not going to be around anymore, why they asked for his resignation and he left.
In a Washington where Republicans control the House, but not the Senate or the White House, what could possibly change beginning in January, be it more resources or policies getting tweaked or maybe nothing?
Well, we all know the, you know, how a bill becomes a law from the Schoolhouse Rock song, right? So you have to have both houses of Congress and a president willing to sign a bill that's put up that would effectively change policy or change the way the enforcement works at the border. The margins are not thick enough to get override a veto. So if this president is dedicated to an open border, I'm not sure the House can change it using their legislative power. But they do have the power of appropriations, right? The so-called power of the purse. And then they have an oversight responsibility. And so a hearing in the oversight and reform or in the judiciary with the Republicans in control of the questioning, that matters, right? The agencies are going to have to respond to that.
One other thing I wanted to ask you, because the White House has said consistently that they want to address the root causes of this migration. There were new numbers released this week showing the biggest migration of Cubans since 1980, replacing Venezuelans, at least for now, as the second largest group coming over the southern border. Does that surprise you? Is this something that regularly changes during any administration?
Well, all of the numbers ebb and flow, and we've seen the changes here. It was largely the Northern Triangle. We saw the large influx of Haitians in the Del Rio last September. Then people from Venezuela took the lead as far as the demographics, and now it's Cuba. So I'm not surprised because that's a very, you know, fluid number, and there's lots of factors that play in. But the root cause here for the magnitude of the migration that we're seeing is the change in policy. Previously, those people would have been sent back or allowed to wait in Mexico for their hearing under the MPP. Before that, they would have been detained, you know, back, you know, several years ago when the courts allowed for that. And so, you know, it's important for us to have relationships in the hemisphere and in some of these sending countries, if it's possible, to have agreements for repatriation and for helping governance and foreign aid and those kinds of things. But that's not going to stop this flow. What's going to stop this flow is holding people to account for breaking the law. And this administration seems unwilling to do that.
Former acting ICE Director Ron Vitello, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
This is Carol Markowitz with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Can the U.S. and China get along? President Biden thinks so.
We're going to compete vigorously, but I'm not looking for conflict. I'm looking to manage this competition responsibly.
That's right after his long meeting on Monday before the G20 summit in Indonesia with Chinese leader Xi Jinping.
I didn't find him more confrontational or more conciliatory. I found him the way he's always been, direct and straightforward. And do I think he's willing to compromise on various issues? Yes.
They also did talk about areas of contention from human rights to Taiwan.
We were very blunt with one another. about places where we disagreed.
To underscore how serious the stakes are, FBI Director Christopher Wray told a House hearing yesterday,
"The greatest long-term threat to our nation's ideas, innovation, and economic security, our national security, is that from China."
And Gordon Chang agrees.
And it's not only what China has been doing with regard to, let's say, stealing U.S. intellectual property, national security secrets, spreading COVID-19, distributing fentanyl, you know, you name it.
Gordon Chang is a senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute, author of the book The Great U.S.-China Tech War.
The threats that we perceive from Iran, North Korea, Russia, they're really China threats, because China is fueling, for instance, the war in Ukraine with its elevated commodity purchases, supplying military information, all the rest of it. And of course, we have the economic relations between Beijing and Pyongyang and Beijing and Tehran. And this really means that the problems in the world are actually being aggravated by China at the moment.
There was some talk that maybe China wasn't too fond of what was going on in Ukraine. There was also the mention that when President Biden and Xi Jinping met, they both said that it's totally unacceptable for the use of nuclear weapons, something that Vladimir Putin hinted could happen in the war in Ukraine. So how involved is China, really?
China's opened up its financial sector to Russian institutions that have been sanctioned. And as I mentioned, the elevated commodity purchases. So, and that finances the war. So you put it all together, Beijing is behind Vladimir Putin. I know that there is reporting in the FT, Financial Times, that Chinese officials were taken by surprise by the invasion, that Vladimir Putin didn't tell Xi Jinping about the war. But the problem with that narrative is that since then, Beijing has gone all in. That's a reality we have to recognize. One other thing, Dave. Yeah, it's great that China recently has been saying that Putin shouldn't be using nuclear weapons. But China itself has been making threats, especially last year and this year, about the first use of its nuclear weapons. So this is not just a Russia problem. This is a China problem.
How big is the Chinese arsenal?
There's disagreement on that. There's a belief that China has now maybe 400 or 500 warheads. Some people believe it's bigger than that. That is substantial, because the United States and the Russian Federation, pursuant to the New START Treaty, which was just extended, have limited themselves to 1,550 deployed warheads each. But China will have somewhere in the neighborhood, maybe of 3,000 or 4,000 warheads in the next, let's say, half decade. That would make it the biggest deployed arsenal in the world.
When President Biden had his meeting, it was over 3 hours. He said they've talked bluntly, but they're trying to find ways to work together. There was a piece in the New York Times that said there were positive noises after talks and that there was offering a glimmer of hope, even though deep divisions remained. Do you agree that there was some glimmer of hope that came out of the meeting?
Well, I mean, you can always say there's a glimmer, but to be realistic, no. And the reason is that President Biden announced at his post-summit press conference that there would be working groups between Chinese and American officials, and that Biden was sending his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, to Beijing. The problem here, Dave, is that we're talking to China, and most Americans would say that's a good sign. That's a glimmer. The problem is, as we talk, China continues unacceptable conduct, and we, as the process of dialogue continues, do not impose costs.
Don't we have costs on China? Don't we have tariffs that President Trump put in place that are still there?
Yeah, the Section 301 tariffs that were put in place in 2018 are still there largely, although the Biden administration has been granting waivers, as the Trump administration did, by the way. And China is still stealing our stuff. But Biden himself has been giving signals to American companies to keep their factories in China. So that's not a good thing.
Well, we have given over the decades a lot of our manufacturing to China in all kinds of industry, including medicine. And I know people said with COVID, they wanted to rethink that. Is that possible? Can we undo any of that or enough of that to make a difference?
Well, we did it, so we can obviously undo it. And I think that we absolutely have to undo it. Remember, in the first months of the coronavirus epidemic, China threatened to cut off the supply of pharmaceuticals to us. And it actually did stop the flow of protective equipment to us. It nationalized an American factory in China making N95 masks. So, yeah, we have to introduce the element of security in it. And that's why, Dave, you know, I thought the CHIPS Act was a good idea. Now, the Wall Street Journal made an excellent case saying, well, this will be economically inefficient. And yes, they're absolutely 100% right. But that's completely beside the point. We need to have on American soil, American chip making capability, because we can't rely on China. We can't rely on our friends. One company in Taiwan, TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, makes 92% of the world's made-to-order chips. In other words, the most sophisticated chips. If we lose Taiwan, we lose our chips.
There's a lot of worry about losing Taiwan to China, which considers the island nation its own territory. Back in August, China reacted angrily with military drills all around Taiwan after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited to show American support. And before Monday's meeting with President Biden, Xi Jinping said,
"As the wheels of history roll forward towards national reunification and the revival of the nation, the complete reunification of the motherland must be achieved and can definitely be achieved."
So Gordon Chang says it is a real possibility that China tries to take Taiwan over.
Remember that Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, has made it a test of personal legitimacy that he annexed Taiwan one way or another. We know that he's engaged in the fastest military buildup since the Second World War. And even more ominously, he has been mobilizing China's civilians for war. So this is not just a military effort. This is a total country effort. We have got to match that if we have had any hope of deterring him. And I can agree with President Biden, as he said on Monday, that an invasion of Taiwan is not, quote unquote, imminent. But just because it isn't imminent doesn't mean we can just ignore it. We Americans are very, very good at ignoring what our enemies say. We ignored Osama bin Laden, for instance, until 9/11. We cannot afford to ignore China, because China is much more powerful than Osama bin Laden was or ever could be. So okay. We could lose our country because we are not taking these signals from China seriously.
Okay, all right, back up. Taiwan's one thing. You said lose our country. How do we lose our country if they invade Taiwan?
Because Taiwan has become the test of American credibility. But China, at the same time, is attacking our democracy, and they are fomenting violence on American streets. They are trying to create a civil war, as we've seen from TikTok and their bots and their propaganda networks. They have killed, as of now, 1,075,000 Americans with COVID-19. You know, Dave, we don't 100% know the origin of SARS-CoV-2, the pathogen that causes this disease, but 100% we know that Xi Jinping took decisions to spread it beyond China's borders once it got out into Wuhan and the central parts of China. For weeks at a critical time, they lied about contagiousness. They knew it was highly transmissible, human to human, but they told us and the world it was not. And while they were locking down their own country, they were pressuring us and others to take arrivals from China without restrictions. We can lose our country because we're not defending ourselves. We do not understand the nature of the challenge and the attacks from China. And because of that, it is entirely possible. China's doing this because they believe that the Communist Party will not be secure as long as the United States exists. This is a zero-sum competition. And because of that, this is a multi-decade effort to take down our government. And we may think that, oh, we're so strong, that can't happen. But yes, it can happen, especially because we are not protecting our society.
So Taiwan is vital if they were to invade. Do you agree when President Biden said a couple of times, the White House seemed to walk it back, that the U.S. would come to Taiwan's defense more so than we did for Ukraine? We would actually be there with our troops.
President Biden said that four times in public, and four times the White House and the State Department and the Defense Department walked his comments back. And that causes the confusion, and that leads, I think, Xi Jinping to believe that the Biden administration is in disarray. But I do believe that President Biden got it right when he said the United States will defend Taiwan, because we have critical, critical national security interests there. And it's not just computer chips, although, of course, that's important. But it's other things. So, as I mentioned, after the fall of Afghanistan, the chaotic withdrawal, after the failure to deter Vladimir Putin in Ukraine, then Taiwan has become the test of credibility of the United States. And we're not going to have allies if they don't think we're going to honor our agreements. Now, we do not have a formal military treaty with Taiwan, but I think that is a practical matter. We have made it clear that we will defend Taiwan. And if we don't, that makes it very difficult for other countries to deal with us. And we cannot allow the Chinese to absorb any democracy, especially one as important as Taiwan. So Taiwan's future and our future are inextricably linked. And I believe that defending Taiwan is defending America.
Gordon Chang, Gatestone Institute senior fellow, of course, an expert on China and North Korea, author of The Great U.S.-China Tech War. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. With inflation soaring and bird flu wiping out turkey flocks, some Americans are seeking alternative ways to celebrate this Thanksgiving holiday. A survey by online financial advisor Personal Capital found one in five Americans have doubts about whether or not they'd have enough money to cover the cost of Thanksgiving this year. Turkeys now cost $1.99 a pound in parts of the country, compared to $1.15 a pound a year ago, according to the USDA. To pivot, people are switching to smaller dinners, eliminating a dish, and even asking guests to bring their own alcohol. Gen Z opting for meals of soup, salad, and pizza, and are more willing to ask friends to pay their share of the feast. A quarter of respondents say they're skipping the holiday altogether. Some retailers seem to be competing to offer the biggest bargain this holiday. Walmart going to sell turkeys and trimmings at last year's prices, basing prices on average cost from November 1st through December 26th, 2021. Aldi is doing a Thanksgiving rewind, reverting cost to averages in 2019 before the pandemic. Appetizers, desserts, sides, beverages, all going to be up to 30% off, including cornbread stuffing, green beans, apple pie, even wine. Finally, Lidl is offering Thanksgiving baskets that feed up to 10 people for under 30 bucks. The discount is available to anyone who's part of Lidl's loyalty program. According to the Consumer Price Index, the cost of food rose 11.2% in September compared to a year ago. However, food at the home category, which is food purchased at grocery stores, rose 13%. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Carol Markowitz.
What's on your mind?
Is there anything masking can't do except for control COVID spread, of course? A new study in the New England Journal of Medicine purports to show that mask policies in schools work to contain COVID. But that's not all. The authors conclude, quote, "We believe that universal masking may be especially useful for mitigating effects of structural racism in schools, including potential deepening of educational inequities," end quote. Sure, masks help fix structural racism. Why not? And the next study will show masking fights climate change. No, what this study shows is that much of the medical establishment continues to be intensely woke and deeply dishonest because of it. Just as the experts told us gathering in crowds wasn't okay in spring of 2020, but just weeks later protesting for Black Lives Matter somehow was. The dishonesty is going to hurt us for a long time. As for this study specifically, it does not prove what the authors intended to. It's just the latest in a push by agenda-driven scientists and the media who love them to get people back in masks. The study centers on two Massachusetts school districts that didn't remove their mask mandates as soon as the state allowed. in March 2022, but kept them until June. A few months later, they saw slightly lower COVID rates than other districts. It's amazing that COVID could lay in wait like that, ready to punish those who behaved badly months earlier. What's even more startling, COVID rates in all the schools were higher before anyone took off their mask. But that uncomfortable fact goes unmentioned in the write-up. Plus, the study doesn't look at actual mask use, just the mandates, nor does it account for any differences in behavior, income level, lifestyles, and so on, which also means it can't show a thing about masks and structural racism, whatever that is anyway. It's pathetic that in November 2022, we have to keep pointing out the obvious and that garbage science like this destroys everyone's confidence in the medical field. Pre-COVID, trusting the medical establishment was the default for all of us, most conservatives included. I'm firmly on the right, but when the health agencies told me in the early days of the pandemic that masking worked, I believed them. Yet things quickly stopped making sense. Masking outside seemed ludicrous right off the bat, yet it would be a long time before these same health agencies admitted it. It wasn't that we stopped believing in masking, it's that we were lied to and then realized it. And common sense did not prevail at all in blue areas. Again, the problem isn't just with masking. It's that the medical establishment has gone fully woke. Wokeness goes hand in hand with forced conformity. No one is allowed to step out of the woke lines, though those lines are free to shift at any time. It's very Soviet. Under those rules, you can't be critical of even this cockamamie study. You're supposed to see that someone squiggled some lines on a graph and pretend it proves something it clearly doesn't because you need to support your side. Inside the woke echo chamber, you even have to embrace insane ideas like masking fights racism. No one at the Times could write an article about how a study like this is gibberish. Medical professionals and journalists who point out the obvious, that the study makes no sense, will be quickly excommunicated. It's sick, and it has to stop. This isn't science, it's politics, and this woke cancer has to be fought until it's defeated. This is Carol Markowitz.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Coming November 21st, Fox News Rewind Financial Crisis 08. A look back at the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression.
The market is not functioning properly.
Subscribe now at foxnewspodcasts.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.